time for Taking Care of Business on Midlands 103. With thanks to the local enterprise offices of Leash, Offaly and Westmeath. Find us on localenterprise.ie and let's talk business.
Midlands 103.
Hello and good evening. It's Tuesday the 31st of January. I'm Ronan Berry and you're very welcome to Taking Care of Business here on Midlands 103. Coming up on the show this evening, do you know about the Dark Skies project and how indeed Dark Skies could be about to revolutionise the tourism and hospitality sectors across Ireland? Possible opportunities presenting for the Midlands there. Find out more about that very, very shortly. I'll have some local reaction too, as IBEC suggests that housing challenges are harming Ireland's attractiveness and competitiveness. Over 70% of firms surveyed as part of the report said that housing challenges were having knock-on effects on recruiting staff for their businesses and in turn stifling growth in those businesses too. We'll have some local reaction from Athlone and indeed from a local recruiter as well, who will paint a kind of slightly different picture on that possibly. So plenty to discuss and divulge into there too. To finish off the show later on, you'll hear from the owner of a Leash play centre who's had to reduce their opening hours due to escalating running costs. That and also changing habits from customers too. So again, more businesses facing challenges, particularly as we come out of that, as we kind of refer to the post-COVID era. Things are changing out there. It's putting pressures on businesses. But some really good stories out there too as well around, you know, a brand new business that has just set up. And you're going to hear about that one very, very shortly. If you want to be part of this evening's conversation, you can text or WhatsApp me on 083 3010 103. Powered by the home of Offaly's top-selling car brand, Lambrothers Toyota, on the Arden Road in Tullamore. You can get in touch too by email on business@midlands103.com. As always, would love to hear from you and know what's going on in your world and what are the latest challenges or the big wins and the successes for your business. But to begin, I'm going to take you back a little bit. And if you remember during the early lockdowns, there was a couple of things became very popular. Like, we talk about things like working from home and the homeschooling. But there was this newfound kind of, with a lot of people, this newfound kind of realization that there was a lot to be gleaned from nature and we were all harping to get back out once restrictions were lifted. And we began to appreciate some of the smaller things in life a lot more. And one thing that a lot of focus went on was cooking and home cooking and people looking at where their ingredients were coming from and what they could then turn their hands to making, particularly items like maybe banana bread. Everybody seemed to be making banana bread for a while, and sourdough, stuff that people had got used to getting in their favourite cafes and their local shops, and they began doing so at home. Well, one such person that started doing that during lockdown was Rayoni Daly. And it started as a hobby because, like a lot of us, she was working from home and she began making sourdough after being given a starter kit from some friends. And you wouldn't believe where she's taken it now already. Rayoni, can I ask you the first question? Why sourdough and what was it that really made you sit up and go, there's something in this for me?
Hi, Ronan. Thanks for having me. So, yeah, it was just about making better decisions of food choices for the family. I've got two young kids and I liked the idea of sourdough being essentially three ingredients, just the flour, the water, and the salt. And so I was playing around with that just for the family. And the more I did it, the more I enjoyed it. And then I just started having way too much bread for just the family. So it just sort of started from there and snowballed on.
And did it take long to perfect a recipe?
It did, it did. I have to say, I actually was having a look back on my social media there. So I think it was 2018 was actually the very first time I tried to bake a sourdough bread. And it was a disaster. It was like flat. It looked like a pancake. It was really heavy. And so I spent time going through watching YouTube videos, reading up on other bakers, following some people that, you know, really inspired me with their journey. And I just kept practicing. And then it was around about August 2020 when everything really started clicking and I started getting the really lovely loaves that were nice and springy and they were just delicious, and it's just grown from there, basically.
And so that was the start of the idea, the incubation part for Little Sister Bakes. At what point did you realise, you've got excess stock, you're creating more maybe than you can actually eat. What made you then say, well, look, I'm going to start setting up a micro business out of this?
Yeah, so it was actually, I saw on the internet a webinar that was run by the Real Bread Campaign over in the UK, and it was a Micro Bakery 101, was basically the name of it, and they had four or five of the bakers over there in the UK talking to a group of people, and they were just giving us some really good basic information about how you could take something like baking bread in your home oven and provide it to, you know, your local community and take away that you know, mass-produced loaf concept that becomes so popular since, you know, the Second World War, basically. So I just basically took it from there, and it's been really good so far. Like I said, I actually started the business in Clane over in Kildare, but we outgrew the house, us and the kids, and we needed a bit more space, and we ended up finding this great property here in Offaly and decided to just bite the bullet and head on over, and it's been great for us because now, I don't know, a few people who follow me on social media will have seen that just yesterday we managed to get our new bread oven installed into the house here. So really at that next step now where I'm graduating from providing really small batches out of a home oven into a bigger oven that can do up to 12 loaves at a time.
So you see a good market opportunity for it?
Absolutely, absolutely. Like, it's a great product. Sourdough is so good. It's so nutritious. And you know, you wouldn't necessarily say that it's gluten-free, but like, I've had a lot of people sort of saying to me that because of the way that the sourdough is processed and the way that it ferments, there is already a natural gluten breakdown in the product. So like, oh, I wouldn't go out and say, you know, definitively someone could eat it if they do have issues like irritable bowel syndrome and things like that. It does seem to be a lot more palatable for people with those types of conditions.
And it's almost taking things back maybe to an older way of doing it, as you say, kind of strip out a lot of the excess and the preservatives and just make something that's very natural and therefore more wholesome.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, bread's been made for thousands of years. We've been doing it since, you know, even before writing began, so to speak. So, like, it's a very, very old tradition, and it's great to be sort of getting back into the way that it was done right in the beginning and just pairing it back to the essentials.
But you've extended your product line too when you started producing pastries, and I believe banana bread appears on it.
Yeah, actually banana bread is one of the very first things I ever baked when I was a kid with my nana. So my banana bread's not sourdough. It's one of the things I do that isn't sourdough. So I do banana bread and Anzac biscuits, which aren't sourdough. But everything else I do, it stems from a sourdough starter. So that's just essentially a flour and water base that you feed regularly to keep the good bacteria growing inside of that starter. And then I just basically feed that every, around about 48 hours before I want to bake, I start feeding it to get it prepared so it's really nice and active. And then I use that to prepare all the doughs. And I make the loaves, I do sourdough scones, I do focaccias and bagels. And I'd love to sort of eventually one day get into doing things like the pastries, like the lovely croissants and things like that. But I'm quite a long way to go from that because I am very much a self-taught baker.
Yeah, and you're very much at that starting point of the journey too. Obviously, adding the oven is a big moment for you. So how do you then go about growing that market? Are you going to look at getting towards like local markets? Will you look at supplying to shops and cafes eventually? What's on the horizon for you?
Yeah, that's absolutely what I'm looking at. So I'm sort of going to keep going with what I've been doing on social media to date, where I just run the business through my Instagram and my Facebook page, essentially. So I still want to be able to provide that bake-to-order kind of service for the local community, but I'd love to be able to supplement that with like you said, a market stall somewhere perhaps, or even if there are some local businesses that are looking to sort of stock any kind of sourdough range, that it'd be great to sort of bring in some local business and get some relationships up and running in the community.
Well, absolutely. You've put a call out to them there now. So I suppose the best thing now is tell people how they can actually find you and just remind you of the, you know, Twitter and Instagram handles and how people can track you down and get in touch if they want the product or indeed they want to try and stock your products.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, like I said, I'm on Facebook and I'm on Instagram, both of them. It's just Little Sister Bakes. And I've got all my email and contact details on both of the social media pages. And you can even do a Google search on me if you want on the internet. I do have the business listed up on the Google search as well. So, but like I said, it's just kind of run from home at the moment, and it is really early days. But, you know, I've only been pretty much open for business in Offaly for 2 weeks now, and the reception's been really great. So feedback has been really positive from everyone. So, you know, it's a great place to live, and like, it's been a really good decision for us as a family to move here and for the business to be able to, make that transition and move and still survive.
That's it. We say it here every week. The Midlands is a fantastic place to live and a great place to work and start a new business. So look at Rayoni, all the very best with Little Sister Bakes. And it sounds like there's going to be some great stuff coming from there over the next couple of years. Fair play to you and all the best with it as you move on.
No worries. Thank you so much for your time.
And that's Rayoni Daly there from Little Sister Bakes, based out near the Blue Ball, outside Tullamore in County Offaly. And it's just fantastic to see somebody taking something, a hobby, and then realising, look, this could be turned into a business. And what I loved about it was working with recipes and techniques that are there for thousands of years. And actually, one thing that's been there for thousands of years or millennia is indeed the night sky. And it can present a huge tourism opportunity, particularly for the Midlands of Ireland. Still to come on Taking Care of Business, reaction locally to the IBEC report suggesting that 70% of firms surveyed stated that housing and accommodation issues are presenting huge challenges towards recruiting new staff and indeed to expanding their businesses in the first instance. So we'll have the local reactions to that and see, is that actually the case in the Midlands? And if so, what's been done and or what might we need to do to overcome those challenges? But first, if you're sitting in a car or you're sitting at your kitchen window or wherever you're listening to me this evening, have a look out at that night sky, that dark sky, you know, particularly on a frosty night when you can see for millions of miles up to the sky and it's illuminated with all the lights and the stars. Well, that, of course, can be referred to as the dark sky. And dark sky ecotourism is very much a real thing. To find out a little bit more about it and see what opportunities it might present for the Midlands area, I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Tony Johnston. Tony's Director of Research Development for the Faculty of Business and Hospitality at TUS Midlands Midwest. Tony, that dark sky, that night sky, it sits above us all. How many of us are actually paying any attention to it? And indeed, how can it in turn revolutionise the tourism sector in this region?
Thanks very much, Ronan, for having me on the show tonight. It's a great question you just asked, and I think maybe more and more people are starting to pay attention to it. Connecting back into what your previous caller was talking about there with the sourdough bread and how it originated out of COVID times, I think lots of people during the last couple of years reconnected with nature and began to appreciate some of the simpler things in life, such as dark skies. So I'm joining you tonight from the phone in Athlone. Unfortunately, we've got cloudy skies here at the moment, but hopefully we'll have some clear skies later and a few listeners might get out for a look.
So with this dark sky ecotourism project, how did it first begin and what are the main objectives of it?
So dark sky ecotourism, to define it first, is a combination of two tourism niches. The dark sky aspect refers to when you have tourism activity taking place under the darkness of the night sky and when that darkness is used as a resource from a tourism business perspective. For example, you've got some locations around Europe which are very good for gazing at stars or viewing celestial events. Your listeners might be familiar with tourists travelling to Iceland, for example, to look at the Northern Lights, or maybe to do some nighttime photography or to use telescopes and so on. So that's the first part of the term around the dark sky side. The ecotourism part of the term refers to tourism which happens in sites which are rural and remote and have some form of sensitive ecology or a strong environmental educational potential for visitors. So this form of tourism usually has very strong, positive economic, cultural and ecological impacts on the host community.
And really, it's inviting people to really kind of, you know, open their minds and change their perspectives, because I know actually Lakeland Kayaks in Mullingar, last year they were inviting people out for like kayak training sessions on the lakes at night and said, you know, it's an entirely different experience than the daytime. And so it's amazing to see like local businesses are already beginning to get clued into the opportunities that might be out there.
Yeah, exactly. When you combine these two areas, you've got a really good tourism product where tourists will visit an area, be wowed by the night sky and make a positive contribution to the environment through the visit and through the activity. And it really all stemmed about from the European Union's interest in reducing light pollution across the continent, because this is a problem that's been growing rapidly. And in many places across Europe, the number of stars that we can see has halved in just two decades. And this is a really negative impact on three main areas. It's very bad for biodiversity, it's bad for human health, and it's very bad for the economy. In terms of biodiversity, when you've got a lot of light pollution, it has a really strong impact on the insect population and knock-on effects on predators. There's declining numbers of nocturnal species, for example. It confuses animal navigation and migration, affects mating relationships and predator and prey relationships and so on. So there's a really big impact on ecology. On human health, similarly, it has a really negative impact when there's too much light pollution, because it disrupts how We sleep. It disrupts physical and mental and behavioral changes when we disrupt what's called a circadian rhythm through too much artificial light. Many people have, you know, seen studies around things like too much looking at your phone screen and so on. All that artificial light is very bad for your health. And finally, the big topic at the moment really is around the impact on the economy. If you just have too much light, if it's too bright, if it's on when it's not needed or where it's not needed, it's simply expensive to run. And as a result, it's really no-brainer to turn off lights that aren't needed and use simple technological solutions such as fitting sensors and so on to reduce the impact.
Yeah, huge amount of focus on obviously energy costs over the past year or 6 months in particular. But when you mentioned there that whole issue of like how basically light pollution has doubled in just two decades, I'm sure that rate is probably growing. Like it's probably getting worse and worse as each decade passes. Like what's the outlook like if say we continue to install artificial lighting at the rate we are? I mean, as urban sprawl continues, as new towns pop up, and as the maybe what was previously referred to as the you know the undeveloped world begins to kind of come up to speed with more Western style development, like are we facing a point very shortly maybe where the night sky will become almost not observable for many people?
Yes, and it's happening across much of the world already. You know, there's a proliferation of cheap lighting, lighting that's too bright, lighting that's pointed in the wrong direction and not shielded, lighting that's on where it doesn't need to be and lighting that's on when it doesn't need to be. And it's all of the graphs are showing it increasing rapidly over the last number of years. We don't really know what the full impact of that will be on ecology and on habitats and so on, but we know that it won't be good from preliminary studies that have been done on you know insects, on bats, on birds, on other mammals and so on. It doesn't look good. However, like most problems in the world at the moment, there is a technological solution to many of these things. You know, there are appropriate LEDs that have low lumens, i.e. they're not as bright, or sensors, or you know simply shielding lights so that they're not pointing directly up in the night sky, are all very simple things that people can do to contribute to a reduction in light pollution.
And is the amount of light pollution, is it measured, you know, at European level or globally? And indeed, is there any moves in place then, you know, in terms of even planning guidelines to try to either reduce that or at least not allow it to grow and increase at the pace it currently is?
There are, and I mean, if you could imagine for a moment, you know, if you went back in time 100 years and you floated up into space and looked down on Europe at night, it would be in almost total darkness. Whereas if you did the same today, you'd easily be able to identify where the large urban centres are and the main motorways and so on. There are a number of European projects that are measuring light pollution at macro scale as well. And from a citizen perspective, there are a number of citizen science projects as well where users can do various star counting activities and contribute to citizen knowledge around it. There's some very simple ways as well that people can look up at the sky in the area that they live and grade the quality of the night sky. So there's something called the Bortle scale, where point one is an excellent dark sky with no light pollution, and point nine is if you could imagine standing in the middle of Times Square, you know, it's ultra bright and you won't see very much of the night sky at all. So this scale is really useful for grading how dark your area is and is very helpful for rural tourism businesses who might want to get involved in this form of tourism to see what potential there is in their region.
Yeah, because really by the sounds of it, there's going to be so many people from even within this country, but certainly from other countries too, who would probably struggle to see the night sky in their own urban environments. And the first time it came onto my kind of horizons, for want of a better word, but 20 years ago, I remember some visitors had come to my parents' house from Manchester and they were actually outside looking up at the night sky because they said they could not see that when they were at home. And of course, it was something I had taken for granted that we see it over the Midlands. So in that regard, I mean, you think of the telescope in Burr Castle, what that would have seen when it was first built versus what it might see now because of light pollution. So what areas or what are there particular amenities around the Midlands that are ideal and earmarked maybe for to benefit from the likes of dark sky tourism?
So in Ireland, there are two places that are leading the way in this field. One is the Dark Sky Park in Ballycroy in County Mayo, and the other is the International Dark Sky Reserve in County Kerry. And these are both international accreditations, which recognise the management plans and work that have gone in from local communities in reducing light pollution and supporting businesses associated with it. And these two areas are leading the way, but while they're doing really, really well, there's nothing that they're doing that couldn't equally be achieved in the Midlands, because we have some fantastic resources here and we have some really entrepreneurial people with great spirit and a great drive in the business community in the region. So, for example, if you look at the Slieve Blue Mountains, the River Shannon, the kind of iconic locations that are around, like the bogs and so on, these are all generally very rural. They're, relatively speaking, quite remote areas. They're quite dark if you use this Bortle scale that I referred to earlier on. And there's a really strong opportunity, I think, for the communities in the region to capitalise on this and get involved in this form of tourism. And some of it can be quite simple. So, for example, imagine that you're a bed and breakfast owner based in County Laois. Sit down for an hour some night and watch some videos on how to learn the basics of astronomy. And next time you've got some visitors and it's a clear night sky, go out and discuss it together and see what you can point out. Start off with something simple, like can you find some of the planets or some of the major constellations and so on. And maybe in a few years' time, you'll have really advanced and you'll have your own telescope and you'll be teaching night photography and running nighttime kayaking and so on. It's a journey, but small steps is a great way for businesses to get involved in this.
Absolutely, and it's just another kind of value-added piece and enhancing that customer experience, you know, for a stay. And I remember even a few years ago talking to somebody about tourism and they mentioned how the Midlands would have been so flat. Actually, there's a whole market open to it in terms of kind of, you know, people who just like to walk and don't want maybe hill walking, but more of a solid, flatter environment to work across. And sometimes, you know, we miss the opportunities that are there in front of us. So plenty of opportunity there, exciting times ahead. What from your own point of view, you're very passionate about these dark sky projects in the first instance. What would you like to see happening in the Midlands if there was one big thing that could happen? What might that be?
So we're doing this as a project through Technological University of the Shannon, and we've some great partners involved with the project. We have a company called Momentum who are based in the Midlands. We have a university from Iceland. We have a project partner from Italy and also from Portugal and from Denmark. And we're taking all of the international expertise from this team, and it's a really multidisciplinary project. We have an architect and an ecologist and marketing people and educational technologists and outdoor adventure and so on. And we're taking this really wide range of knowledge together, and we're creating a set of resources which will be on our website, which is called darkskytourism.eu. And this website has a vocational education and training project. It has a mobile application and it has a guide for SMEs. And what I'd really love to see in the Midlands region over the coming years would be engagement with these resources. They're all free, they're all easy to access and written in very non-technical language so that local businesses and local communities can learn about the potential of dark sky ecotourism, get involved and, you know, make all these positive contributions that I spoke about to the economy, to human health and to ecology.
It's very hard to argue with that as well. And the fact that the dark sky is there, it already exists. There's no investment needed in that. It's just in terms of that little bit of rethinking as well and how they can expand their own businesses and indeed, you know, add an extra layer of experience for all their guests as well. It sounds absolutely fascinating. Tony, thank you so much for coming on this evening and definitely one that I'll follow up with you down the line.
Thanks very much, Ronan. Take care.
That's Dr. Tony Johnston there from Tooze Midlands Midwest. And Tony is the Director of Research Development for the Faculty of Business and Hospitality. That website that Tony mentioned there, darkskytourism.eu. Fascinating stuff happening. And, you know, if you're a tourist business, maybe there is an opportunity and an opening there that, dare I say, was just sitting there above your head all the whole time and maybe you just weren't aware of the potential that it brings. The business group IBEC issued a report earlier this week. It was based on a number of companies that they had surveyed, and it came back to suggest that 70% of those companies said that they were experiencing issues in recruiting staff, indeed retaining staff, but also in growing their businesses due to housing and accommodation issues. They highlighted in the report, you know, the amount of housing that's needed. I mean, the government's plans are to build 30,000 housing units a year for the next 10 or 15 years. IBEX report suggests that will need to be closer to 62,000 units a year. So let's look a bit more at this report and see, well, what does it mean for business on the ground? And is that being reflected by the very businesses that we have across these great counties of ours? Firstly, I'd like to go across to Geoffrey Allen. And Geoffrey's the Chief Executive Officer of Mersis Technologies, based in Athlone. Very good evening, Jeff. Is this a real and present challenge for businesses like yourselves?
Good evening, Ronan. Thank you for having us on. Well, to frame it in simple terms, I have a young man getting up in Cork City tomorrow at 4 o'clock to make his way up to Athlone. And it'd be much better if he could roll out from Coosan and come into the town centre. So it has impacted us. It impacts us in terms of who and where we can recruit from. We don't work remotely. We use hybrid, so the people come in 2 days a week, because that's very important for the holistic development of people. So more houses is impeding the economic growth of the districts around Athlone, and I think it's a nationwide problem.
Yeah, I think the IPEC report is highlighting an issue that has been there. I know I spoke to you about 6 months ago just at an event, and we highlighted this, but the conversation goes way back as well. When did it first really present itself as a challenge for Mersis?
Well, for us, it was about 2 years ago as we looked to expand our team. You know, like, it was, I know it was during COVID, but and remote was the in thing then. But coming out of there, possibly around a year ago, there was just nothing available, you know, and we had to make a lot of contingencies. I had people coming from Monaghan on buses, which is not a well-served route, the Monaghan-Athlone route. You know, we had people coming from Dublin at one stage, and a couple of days a week. And it's an expense, because people don't want to spend their lives in vehicles, you know.
Absolutely. No, I would agree with you on that one too. But, it, you know, it makes the working day so long, and Julie has knock-on effects on productivity. But to put it in context, just give us a reminder of the level of growth that you've experienced in terms of staff numbers over the past few years.
Well, pre-COVID, we were down at around 8 or 12 people. We grew to about 12 people, but now we've been up teetering around the 20 mark. So there's a lot of new bodies, warm bodies, and we want to integrate them into teams. So the lack of housing means the quality of life isn't there for them. And the truth is, a lot of young people are driving and been driven into remote offers. I had a company offer 6 of our engineers significant increase in wages, 50%. For them to work remote, an American company, you know, that's hard to compete when you're a small technology company in the middle of Ireland, you know. And that's, it sounds very attractive that you can move to Spain and live up the lifestyle, but the truth is, as a person, they're not getting integration into teams. I'm very concerned about building teams over the next couple of years with our, as we attempt to scale here.
Yeah, and you mentioned competitiveness there too. And of course, the other side of it, we've seen over the last few months, maybe the risks involved sometimes when you work for some of the big, maybe American or other European country headed tech giants, when you see the way jobs are being shed as well. So clearly challenges are presenting to keep these jobs in the local areas. Is that being done, do you think? Or, you know, are you raising this with anybody, like any elected representatives, or are business owners maybe just so frustrated they're not sure where to go and what to do about it?
Well, it is a challenge, but there'll always be challenges known in business, you know. There is some dedicated clusters. I know we're involved in one there in Athlone around Industry 4.0 that's very good, and it brings business owners together. And it's the one challenge we all face, you know. Wherever you go in Ireland, the option is there to live in more rural areas if it's well served by quality broadband and there's good quality life in those areas. But that's fine when you're dealing with people who are established and have careers that have a few years' experience behind them. But we are focused very much on graduates and hiring graduates. And I think if they tend to come in to get a small bit of experience and then think they're ready for remote, but it's going to challenge them in terms of their communication with their team members, with the management, and I think that'll only snowball into it. 3-5 years down the road, this will become a massive problem for team building, you know.
You're very much a creative business. Your idea is people. So do you think as well, if it's entirely remote, did the ideation and creativity, does that suffer as well?
Doomed is the word I'd use. Because we all learn by experience, by peers, by young people, around old people, the merge of ideas and the clash, and that's what we would like. We thrive on the new ideas coming in from people that have very energetic and dynamic, coming straight out of college with fresh ideas and stuff like that. And then we just show them the technology. So they need that interaction. And there's nothing. I remember the first day back after COVID, it was like literally back to school. The guys weren't mixing. And now when you come in and we bring them in on Wednesday and Thursday morning, there's a huge energy that's palpable. You know, there's a bit of crack. There's a bit of going on. They all have kind of teamed up in their little groups, and some are sporty, others are into other things, and that's the dynamic that makes an energy that builds a culture, you know, and I think culture will suffer if we don't get them back in and interacting with each other.
And of course,
you know, and that's about a few pints on a Thursday evening on the way home too, which is about living locally within reason, you know. So I think housing is a huge issue for all of us.
Yeah, absolutely. Get those people, have the option to work locally too, or just even to work on that hybrid model and have that opportunities there and keep up that and build that culture and keep those ideas flowing. Jeff, thank you so much for your time this evening. Much appreciated, and we'll talk again soon.
All the best. See you too. Take care.
Jeff Allen is the CEO of Mersus Technologies in Athlone, a fantastic company. They, of course, created the Avatar Academy that digitises medtech and biopharma and pharma training processes using virtual reality. An award-winning product they've developed there, amongst other things as well. Check them out, Mersus, MERSUS.IO. Now, to continue this conversation, I'm delighted to be joined in studio by Yasmin Elkershi from All Pro Recruitment. And Yasmin, you're recruiters, you're out there working with the businesses across the Midlands and Ireland and even further afield now. Are you seeing these challenges presenting to companies, and is it causing problems, or what's your perspective on it?
I mean, the great thing about us is that's all we do. So we just recruit. So, you know, like Jeff there, he has 100 other million things to do in a day, whereas all we do is recruit. So, you know, that's it. So we know all the candidates that are ready. We have alerts set for all the different jobs that when someone says they're ready to move, you know, we're on it. So that's from our point of view. Of course, businesses are affected by, the cost of housing and the cost of living in general. So we have like a situation here in, for example, County Offaly. We have the second highest growth rate in job opportunities last year. So we grew by 19% in Offaly. Roscommon was 18%. So there's a lot of jobs out there. Actually, LinkedIn CEO released a report there this week, and he actually said that there's more jobs available than people looking for jobs in Ireland at the minute.
Okay.
So it's an interesting time, right?
Right, so that's kind of certainly kind of reconfirming what we've known for a while, that actually the job market is quite vibrant, it's wide open, there are opportunities. So at what point does maybe the lack of accommodation, does that come into it, or are you finding that maybe no, that's not an issue, it's still just back to finding the right candidate for that role and somebody else can worry about that, or it's not presenting to candidates?
I think it just depends. Like, so we have a lot of, just like what Jeff was talking about, so we have companies that are obviously looking at more remote working and hybrid as a way of bridging that gap. Also, that's, if you look at any of the research that's done, that's what employees want this year. Like all the research is, what's the most important thing to you, is all about working hybrid, flexibility of working. Actually, an interesting fact happened over the pandemic is since we've become more hybrid working has been more available. And I know some businesses can't do that. I totally understand that. More women have re-entered the workforce than ever before. So it's an interesting flip side for that as well. And it's because they have, traditionally they would have done part-time work, so they had the flexibility to look after childcare. Whereas now with flexible working, they're able to manage that.
And you've seen a kind of a growth in women returning to like full-time roles as well, and not just as part-time. So that's interesting.
It's very interesting, isn't it?
That's bringing it back up, because again, it's an area that's been identified too. So, okay, Jeff, you said, you know, some businesses, they entirely remote working won't suit them. They want to get people in for that creativity piece, that innovation piece, to build teams, to build cultures as well. Absolutely. And I would tend to totally agree with Jeff on that. The team I work with myself, we're spread across different locations, but there's an absolute want and desire to get together every couple of weeks just to do those kind of brainstorming things too. So we're getting some of the good stuff from the pandemic. You know, we're using that to our advantages as business owners then too. So when you look at somewhere like Offaly, and it's got the second highest rate of vacancies across the country, what do you think is driving that? Like, are there particular sectors, or Is it just like, is it, are the figures kind of misconstrued from the fact that maybe there was a lot of people on the pup during the pandemic and now they're just back looking, those businesses are looking to refill those roles?
Yeah, I mean, you could say that, but then that wouldn't explain why we would be the highest. Then it would be somewhere with a bigger population, right? So we don't think it's that. It's across the board. Like, people are looking for, so we've got this situation, right? We're actually at full employment in Ireland, pretty much. It's, our employment rate is under 5%, which is the lowest it's ever, ever been, even Celtic Tiger times. So I suppose what you have is a situation where you have to take someone has to come from one job into another job, you know? So I guess that's a kind of the interesting part about it, right? And this year, for example, about 60% of people are planning to move jobs, which is, you know, for your listeners here today, businesses, it's, your attention is so important. That's why I think I'm going to say, but working with a recruiter is really good because we work with you on your candidate experience. That's how the candidate flows through the whole process, so you don't lose them. And that's what's happening as well, is someone like Jeff will go through the whole process of recruiting someone and they might slip out of the net, whereas, you know, because maybe you haven't got back to them on time or, you know, something like that, or someone else is chasing. Don't think that someone else isn't chasing your candidate, your potential employee at the same time as you are. It's, well, kind of like a dating site, you know. You gotta.
Well, I have to say, I actually don't know anything about those. Unfortunately, I've given away my age now, I'd say. But so when it comes to that, then you said people maybe slipping out of the net or just going, is that again because technology has really expedited that process? And if you take a slightly more traditional approach, you're not in and you're gone. Is that actually happening out
there? Exactly. And like, what we're finding is if someone is desperate for staff and they're not getting back to that employee straight away, well, then there is literally hundreds of other companies that are sitting on, whether it be LinkedIn or whether it be Indeed or whatever, just waiting for that person to say that they're looking for a job. So like, for example, some of the stats we have is, for every job, so one in every, if for example, in construction, one in every construction job is not filled. Yeah. One in every four. So you can imagine if someone who is good at construction becomes available, literally all the recruitment companies, all the employers are all chasing that one person.
And would you see that even, say, senior roles are being filled a lot quicker than they would have been pre-pandemic?
They have to be. Because if you want to keep your staff, if you want to attract the best, you have to have a really good candidate experience. You have to be in contact with them. You have to be quick turnaround, quick decision making, you know, quick negotiation. You need to keep them in the loop, set expectations of when you'll return to them. You know, so if you're saying you're going to call them back in a week, you know, tomorrow, don't leave it a week. You know, that person is going to be gone and someone else will take them. And like, that's just the reality of the market at the minute. It's a candidate driven market. In the UK, Reed just came out with research that for people to work 5 days a week, that businesses are actually paying them a premium to come into work at the minute. So that's the market that we're in. And this is one of the stories that in the research they found is one job seeker asked for a duvet day, one duvet day a month. Now, they didn't get the job, but that just shows you that the market is there for the candidates to ask for this kind of thing.
It's a pity Jeff isn't on the phone. I don't know what he'd say.
He would have definitely had a rolled his eyes.
Absolutely. So look, clearly it's a rapidly evolving sector. And I guess if for anybody that hasn't maybe been recruiting and is thinking about it, just bear in mind it's probably vastly changed than it was when you last done it as well.
Yeah.
What's new in it then? What's the latest technique for persuading people to move, or what's helping companies to really get somebody across that line and signing that contract and starting with them?
So if at all possible, so the things that people are really interested in at the minute, like I said, are hybrid or flexible working. The 4 day a week is a big buzz term. So if that's something that you're working towards, definitely do it. But what about your culture, your actual, you know, your workplace culture? People want to work. So at the minute, obviously, you've got money and finances and all those things, and they're important. We're in a cost of living crisis. But people since the pandemic, they want a good lifestyle. They want good work-life balance. They want to work in a place where people are nice to them, where they have a great culture and they get on. You know, Jeff is talking about having the crack in the office. It's so important to work with people that you like and that you have a great place where you can do your best work.
Yeah. It in turn, of course, has a benefit for the local economy too. And of course, if you were somewhere in the Midlands, you could be getting your fresh made sourdough from Little Sister Baked. You could be out enjoying that dark sky that Tony Johnson spoke about and all the amenities that the Midlands has to offer too. So look at opportunities there. So the housing accommodation, it's there, I suppose, is good. I beg have highlighted, yeah. But at the minute, you're probably not seeing it having a major impact on your recruiting business.
Yeah, I mean, it does definitely have an impact, but like it's such a big problem, you know. So I know that there are people who are working to try and resolve it.
But, so you need to get out and make sure 4 in 4 construction jobs are filled and then everybody's going to be happy. Yasmin El-Kershi, All-Pro Recruitment, thank you so much for that this evening. And a big thanks as well to Jeff Allen from Mercer's Technologies there. So yeah, it is a real challenge for some companies there. And as Yasmin has pointed out as well, I mean, to speed the recruitment process and the onboarding, get it done, because people could be gone. Somebody else will whip them and take them away from you. Or even as Jeff's company experience as well, sometimes that ridiculously large offer comes in from a bigger company, one that you can't compete against, but you would wonder the long term there. Play the long term game on those ones if you are that person, because you know the grass can often be greener on the other side. And don't overlook what's available to you locally too. Amongst all the optimistic stories and the positivities, there is invariably week on week stories of businesses that are really feeling the pinch and struggling with lots of things like energy costs. But it goes beyond that for some businesses, because changes in people's behaviour and spending habits are becoming as big an issue as energy costs for one local business. It's one of the main reasons Clown Around in Port Arlington has been forced to reduce its opening hours. Morning bookings have started to dry up, and when customers are there, they expect more from staff and even more activities. An owner of the Soft Play Centre, Elaine Mullally, has been speaking to Midlands 103's Will Faulkner about this on Midlands Today earlier this morning.
Energy is one part, but costs in general are gone up across the board. So all of our suppliers, you know, our food, drinks, all that kind of stuff, that's gone up by between 15 and 25%. Energy's gone through the roof, which we know, and as a result then, obviously, all of our suppliers are feeling the pinch and they have to put their costs up in line. So, yeah, we, for the last 3 months, we were monitoring our supplies and our outgoings and expenses, and we just made a decision in the last 2 weeks that it was, instead of putting prices up, because we feel people, they're feeling it in their pockets across the board as well. They're more than likely just won't be able to support us if we increase our prices. So rather than increase our prices, we've just cut down our opening hours. Mm. So we're spending less.
Yeah, you reach a point of diminishing returns, all right, if prices go too high.
Yeah, I know. We're going month by month. That's the best way. Otherwise, we'd have to throw the towel in at some point. So we're just saying, no, let's keep going. We're able to sustain it the way it's going at the moment. The bulk of our business at the moment is birthday parties. So, and the funny thing is, once we did announce it, you know, the support locally was just phenomenal. The amount of phone calls, bookings and stuff we got was amazing. So like people just, they really do value the service. And a lot of people have said it would be such a shame if you did have to close, because everybody loves the entertainment. They love coming in. Their children love it. It's a great place for parties, and not just Plug of My Business, in general play centres as well. But
My own gang have gone there many times and always come back with a smile on the face. What were your opening hours, and what times then are you moving to?
So when we first opened, we're 15 years open. The bulk of our years, we opened from 10 till 6, Monday right through to Sunday. After COVID, we reduced to Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then in recent months, pulled it back to Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And now it's Saturday, Sunday. We will open, obviously, during when the kids are off school. There's a midterm coming up. We'll open every day there. And the hours have gone from 10 to 6 to 12 to 5.
There you go. That's the real issues that are affecting our local businesses there too. And I suppose the big question you better ask too is, you know, even as the reduced opening hours, is it actually doing much to reduce the energy bills? It's probably not doing a whole lot. but at least it's reducing staff and operational costs as well. So look, at just trying to highlight some of the challenges that a lot of businesses are facing. We'd spoken earlier in the show about accommodation and housing, and I think it's widely acknowledged there's a big problem there, and one that does need to be sorted on many levels, and particularly from a commercial and a business activity level there too. But also we looked at opportunities that might present to the Midlands in particular, from dark sky tourism. Look at that huge amenity that's up there. It's there, it's free, and it can be utilised and capitalised upon to really grow your business or tourist offering too. And maybe you're like someone like Rayoni Daly, who decided to start making sourdough a couple of years ago and has now turned it into a micro bakery out in the Blue Ball and is looking at doing great things over the next couple of years. So look, at lots happening as always around the Midlands, this fantastic region we live in. Hopefully tonight's content has been of use to you. I must say a huge hello and a massive congratulations to Mary and Teddy, or Mammy and Daddy as I know them. Be 55 years married tomorrow. Now that's some milestone, isn't it? Fair play to them. I'll talk to you all later on. Stay safe. Talk to you all next week.
Taking Care of Business returns next Tuesday at 7 p.m. with the local enterprise offices of Leash, Offaly and Westmeath. Find us on localenterprise.ie and let's talk business.